And yes, we are live and recording. So yes, welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 15. Episode 15 of Brain Food Live on Air. I'm delighted to be here and still doing this. For everyone who hasn't seen the show before, what this is a review show of what's of the content we sent around last week on Sunday and the stuff that we've been talking about throughout the week, typically on Facebook, also on LinkedIn. And we're going to bring on a bunch of guests as well to talk about a focus topic as well. I'm joined as ever by Brain Food Chief Promoter, Adam Gordon. Adam, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. And I've just realized that Brain Food Chief Promoter, I actually got some of my experience to do that from my previous role as Wreckfest Chief Promoter.
Ah, there you go. You're just a promoter, aren't you, Adam? That's the real purpose of being for you, is to go and promote other people's stuff. Yes. So thank you very much for that. No, but it's been great, and always great to have a chit chat with you, because you know you're always one of these people that does take a deep dive into the brain food. So I just wanted to kick that off and just figure out what you thought was particularly interesting in the issue that you saw last week on Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. So the first one that I really enjoyed was one that, in fact, I had seen it before, but I just thought it. I think it's brilliant. So the guy Peter Capelli.
Yes.
He is a professor at Wharton Business School, and mm-hmm. He says your approach to hiring is all wrong. He starts by saying the competition for recruits is harder than ever. Companies are hiring more than ever. Partially because people are turning around their jobs faster, and companies are spending more money than ever, and you're getting it worse wrong than you ever have done. So his view is organizations made a switch, and LinkedIn's partially to blame for this. Organizations made a switch to going external hiring, and because it's easy, because we can find everybody online now, rather than working really hard on internal mobility. And that's organizations are suffering because of that. So if people have got less places to go to inside their organization, then they're going to leave. And it's a perpetual cycle of just nonstop churn.
Yeah. You know what? Harvard Business Review basically collects together some of the best content around. So, I mean, I think every week there's something from Brain Food featured on there. I've just shared the link with everyone there. If you haven't read Capelli's post, please do that. It's basically a call to action to say, hey, stop recruiting from the outside. One thing, though, I agree with him 100%, but one thing I think he didn't account for was what the scope of TA really is. And a little bit of the problem with his with the situation, which he's accurately diagnosed in my view, is that talent acquisition has been set up only to look externally. And we don't have the internal remit. So whenever someone says, hey, listen, hire these five people, we are implicitly told, go out there and hire from external. And we'd probably be told off, we pull them from different teams internally. They'll be saying, you know, what, you just create more vacancies internally, you're not growing the company. So I think fundamentally, we either have to expand the role to take on internal mobility, and that kind of takes a little bit from HR, or HR have got to step forward. And kind of work collaboratively with recruitment, and take on board more of that aggressive internal mobility, and start recruiting internally. Mm-hmm. Anyway, great post. People should read it.
Just on that, if you talk to it, there's some people who, I mean, there are quite a lot of teams who do that internal mobility thing, and so I think if you listen to Jeremy Roosen explains what his view on the difference between resourcing, recruitment, talent acquisition is, and I'm pretty sure his definition is that talent acquisition looks after external recruitment. Resourcing includes the internal mobility and making sure that the jobs are, you know, the internal workforce is all in the right place, etc. So kind of moving into organizational design and things like that a little bit.
Yeah, so basically resourcing is a bigger term, because you're resourcing, you're just making sure that this function has got the human capacity to deliver against it. Mm-hmm. And talent acquisition is narrower, specifically about hiring from external. Okay, it's very interesting.
Toby Culshaw made a point, which is that I think this is kind of tongue in cheek. We've become a victim of our own success, that talent acquisition has been more successful. than internal talent mobility. And I suspect it's actually simply because HR teams have become, oh, Jeremy's there. Hi. HR teams or internal teams, they know it's just a lot faster to go onto LinkedIn. If they want a job filled, whether it's internal or external, they go onto LinkedIn, find all the people that could do the job. I bet they're bringing in people from their own company into their shortlist of sourcing.
I've personally done that. I remember back in the agency days where we even covered the information that someone's actually interested in an internal job. But that information was not surfaced internally. So yeah, absolutely. It's difficult to find the motivation. But we'll get there with a lot of this employee sentiment analysis and all this type of software we're plugging into. So I think we'll start kind of closing that loop. Anyway, moving on. What else is interesting, Adam?
Well, Amazon are automatically firing people based on low productivity. Yeah. The people may as well not have a boss. There's no point. They should get automatic hired by a robot, turn up on day one, and then just get shown a video on how to do their job, and then get fired if they're not productive enough by the robot. They are. Baz has made a point. They're already hired by a robot, and that's pretty much the case. But being fired by a robot is something that I've not seen that until now.
You know what? I people were disturbed by that. The instinct was, oh my goodness, we've kind of lost a little bit of humanity. But I remember having a dialogue online on Facebook group. I think it's on Recruiters Online on the Animals Facebook group. And it was like, okay, well, at least we're getting fired. At least it's an objective measure. I mean, is it any worse to be fired by a robot than it is to a human boss who, you know, might have all of these prejudices involved? Whereas here, it's at least is objectively about your poor performance. And I think how they measured it was purely about time off task. You know, how over the course of 8 hours during the day, how long, how many times are you off task? And over a period of time, maybe we can say you're simply less productive. So, yeah, very interesting. I've just shared that link as well. So please check that out if you haven't already done so. Okay, what else is interesting, Adam?
Are we going to do a show on this, Reddit for hiring?
Yes, we are definitely going to do a show on this.
This guy's created a big repository. Aaron Matthew has created a big repository of items to do with hiring via Reddit.
Yeah, it is a mystery to me. So I will want to speak to Aaron and indeed anybody else who knows something about Reddit, Reddit sourcing, and we'll get them on the show. There's the Google Doc. It's open for people to view. I think it basically lists about 50 links that are useful for recruiters there. But it is, I think, the 8th most visited website on the planet. So if recruiters aren't getting into it, we should. Lots of people are logging into Reddit and reading every day. It's very sparse in terms of human biography, of course. There's no ID verification. Everyone's got kind of call sign type names. But you might be able to spot who people are based on their subreddits, like who do they follow, which groups they're in, and what kind of commentary that they put forward. And you can, I think, unlimited message if you follow each other. So we will.
Yeah, you. I wonder if the Chrome extensions work on Reddit, so you're on somebody's profile and you can then find them on LinkedIn or whatever. I suspect
they might do, but I've never seen one. And I think the main reason, I mean, you do need to sign up with an email still. So yeah, maybe exactly. Maybe there's a way you can do it. But I'm going to, you know what? I don't know enough about it. I'm putting the public call out now. If you source on Reddit and you know anything about it, make yourself known.
Yeah, Martin knows the answer to that immediately.
All right, so Martin, you're on the spot. Come up with the how to hire on a Reddit sourcing guide, and you're on the show next week. All right, no worries. So what we're doing today, we're going to focus on quite an interesting and kind of orthogonal topic with regards to recruiting, because it's about public speaking. And I don't know about you, Adam, but I get a lot of people coming to me and saying, okay, Hung, how do you get on stage? How do you do all of this type of stuff? And I realized that I didn't formally think about it. It's sort of all happenstance in that way. So today's topic is going to be about recruiters on stage, public speaking, why'd you do it? How'd you do it? How'd you get good at it? And you know, what are the pros and cons? What do you actually get out of it as a person doing it? So before we bring in our guests, I wanted to just ask you the question, Adam, because I saw a talk that you gave recently, actually, I forget the name of the event, but it was a 20-minute talk on marketing. I thought it was exceptional. So I'll ask you the question, public speaking. How did you get into it? And what do you think the value is for recruiters?
So how did I get into it? I went to the event organizers and asked them how much it was to get on stage.
You're a vendor, right? So there's the difference. I mean, you've got a kind of a vested interest in, yes, absolutely, you've got to represent the product.
I'm going to talk about that specific issue later on. But in all seriousness, you need to be in the right communities. So in our world, for example, there's certain Facebook groups you should contribute to. And if you do, people will get to know you. Things like DBR.
What groups? I mean, let's just shout them out so people know where they are.
Right. Well, I mean, the biggest and the kind of Wild West group is Recruiters Online.
Yeah.
And then some of those that are a little bit kind of more sophisticated. Sorry, Animal, if you're here, but it's the truth. Would be Recruiting Brain Food, for example.
Yep, absolutely.
Quite honestly, Jacob's group has got some intelligent conversation on there about some smart things, which is Recruitment Evolution.
Recruitment Evolution, yeah.
Yeah, Viva la Evolution. I really love Talent Product Plays. That is that's the group where there's a lot of chat around recruitment technologies,
yes,
and putting them together and sophisticated things going on. That's one
by George LaRocque and Martin. I wouldn't call him Martin Freeman, but that's an actor, isn't it? Martin Burns. Something over him. Burns. Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. And then of course there's some of the broader groups that I kind of get involved with sometimes, like ERE. Source con, some of those.
Yeah.
Big, and I think
they're actually explicit events based groups, aren't they? So I think that obviously makes sense for you to be in them if you have an interest in, you know, potentially getting to speak at these things. Go and join Source con on Facebook. Of course, you should do that.
Transform Recruitment Marketing. I do quite enjoy, and I used to contribute a lot to that until I realized it was a Smashfly community. And then the other one that I quite like is the Employer Branding Forum, which actually I encouraged them to change their name because it was the Employment Branding Forum originally, and then I pointed out that doesn't really make sense in the context of what they're talking about. It's because that's branding. Employment branding is branding the concept of having a job. So I got them to change it to the Employer Branding Forum, and that's a really good event, a good group around employer branding. The other one is Trish Revel's group, and I can't remember the name of it. But again, there's some edgy kind of conversation in there around, it's Growth Hacking for Recruiters.
Growth Hacking Recruiters, yeah. I'm just like finding this and pinging them out. So hopefully people can get this on the chat.
Yeah, I still think most people in recruitment don't realize just how much community and how much conversation is happening on Facebook. I still think most people do not realize that the conversation that used to happen on LinkedIn groups has not disappeared. It's moved to Facebook. Lock, stock, straight moved to Facebook. Mike never considered it. So
absolutely. You know what? Mark Lundgren and I had a talk. We shared the stage. I was very honored for that. Thank you very much, Mark, with the Recruitment Network. And it was an agency owner type of audience. And Facebook was not well known as a place that actually you would have this type of knowledge share and community type of access. And it's free. It's free content. Like loads of people came up and said, "Hey, oh, that's amazing talk and all this type of stuff. Can you come and give us some consultancy and all this type of stuff?" And I was thinking, you know what? You could just join these groups and get this content for free. You don't need to pay me any money. But anyway, there's a bunch of groups there. Go and take a look at that. And you think that's actually a way to get on stage? So can you connect with how does that connect to actually going on stage and speaking about stuff?
So the first thing you need to do is you need to go and take a look at the conversation and try and judge the tone on these communities. And then what you need to do is start taking part and start putting your comments on, see what people respond to, see what just goes down in flames, and then start creating your own discussions. Start creating your own discussions on there. Make absolutely sure that you're talking about things that are absolutely up to date, people, things that are giving people a unique perspective, or and if you do that 5-10 times on a particular Facebook group, people absolutely start to get your to know your name. If your post goes down in flames and nobody comments on it, you need to change it. Clickbait does work, although you become to be known as slightly vacuous if you keep doing it all the time. So that's the first thing. I think the other place to
All right, hang on, Adam, before you keep talking, because I think I've got to stop here because you're going to keep talking, aren't you? One thing I will say, what a big takeaway from all of that is, number one, it's a great place to establish name recognition for other people so they know who you are. So you have to be Adam Gordon, you have to be Hung Lee, you have to be your real name, your real face, get in these groups, contribute, add value, and pretty soon your name will be known. And that will help you because the event organizers are often part of these groups if they're not running these groups even, and you might then get picked out. So that's a great one to start off with, name recognition. Okay, cool. Listen, I'm going to start bringing the guests on because I've got a great lineup of people from both the people who've gone on stage and got value from it, but also people who run events. So I'm definitely very excited to invite on a good friend of mine, Jamie Leonard, the world famous Jamie Leonard, and I'm really looking forward to seeing his opinion on what makes a good speaker, and how you know he gets his schedule of people to come in and do talks and stuff like that. So, Jamie, I think I've just invited you on, so hopefully he will be here shortly.
There you go. Am I here? I'm here. How are we doing?
There he is. Jamie, good to see you, sir. How are you?
Good to see you guys. I'm good, guys. It's Friday. We're good. We're fun.
You know what? I think this is going to be quite common. I mean, maybe this is a good idea. We should have like a drinks thing.
Like a happy hour. Yeah. I think it's great. Happy hour.
We do our talk. We do start the show at 4. So generally speaking, maybe we should all do it beer in hand. So listen, Jamie, I wanted to really get you on to get your perspective from the event side. A bunch of people watching this are probably going to be recruiters who may want to get on stage more. Like, how do they do that? We know from Adam's perspective, his idea was, listen, recognition, get in these communities, get in these groups. What's your view? How do you think they need to be get on your radar?
I got to say, and I'm going to bow down to Adam's experience on that one. We've never picked anyone because of them making noise online in the communities, but that's not to say that other people don't. You know, we don't go looking through other communities. For me, I think, I mean, first it's about what the content, right? So, you know, yeah, you can make a lot of noise online, but if you look at someone like, I think that's someone like Chris Ray is a great example, who Chris came to us and said, look, we're going to use the world's first recruiting chatbot. I'd like to talk about it. And we give Chris a major stage at RecFest. Headlined him in probably one of the first talks he'd given at an event, I think, because he came to us with something unique. And that's what, you know, as an event organizer, what we're looking for is either a unique story or an old story told in a unique way. So either content being very fresh and not completely recycled, or it's coming from a very good speaker that's maybe delivering it in a unique way.
Let me just stop you there, Jim. That's very interesting. But Chris needed to step forward and volunteer himself to you rather than finding him.
Well, we found Chris. Chris came to one of our events and he was very vocal at the event and he had a lot of opinions. And this is generally where we find our first time speakers. You know, they're the contributors at some of the smaller events, some of the smaller round tables. And, you know, we got chatting to him afterwards in the bar and he just said, look, you know, I'm doing this and I don't think it's been done before. So we was like, well, you know, we want that on our stage. And where Chris was really good with us is we said, look, this needs to be the first time the story is told. But one thing you don't want as an event organizer is recycle content. You know, we see the same people saying the same thing over and over again, and that doesn't put asses on our seats. So, you know, it's important that there's something unique. So that's why with RecFest, not so much with the other events, we do say to people, look, please make sure you don't tell this story a month beforehand at another event, because it's not real. and there's no real benefit to the audience if they can see it in a YouTube video, you know, 3 weeks previous.
So what was the difference between somebody getting your attention at an event by talking about something interesting versus them doing the same on, say, a Facebook group?
No, nothing at all. And I'm not saying that other event organizers don't. And actually, it sounds like a really good idea. So I'm not very active on the Facebook groups. I don't think any of my team are very active. And actually, it sounds like we should be, because it's actually a very good idea. We don't get heavily involved in the Facebook communities, which there are obviously loads and super active. We probably should do. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I think it's a really good idea.
So it definitely happens. So I got invited onto the Recruiting Animal show about 2.5 years ago for the first time, based on some things I was talking about on his Recruiters Online Facebook group. And that was one of the first things I did in this kind of talent acquisition, community.
Yeah, I think the other thing is just, you know, put your hand in the air. I think a lot of people are nervous to actually approach event organizers and say, look, I've got a good story. You know, we get maybe 30 requests a week to speak at various events, but I think that could be a lot more. I just think people are nervous. I think there's a worry that it's almost the opposite of delusions of grandeur. People don't feel like they're kind of worthy enough to be on stage, when actually 9 times out of 10, that's bullshit.
Well, this is imposter syndrome, right? I mean, that's now it's common parlance. I felt the same way. I think when I was talking about it today, this morning, I think Stephen O'Donnell actually was one of the first people invited me to do a talk. You know, the first thought was, look, what have I got to say about this? You know, I mean, why I'm interested in hearing from experts or people who really know about it. What do I know? So imposter syndrome, I'll be interested to see what we deal with that. Because we've got a few other guests on the show who are actually at different stages of their speaking careers. And I want to sort of get them on now to maybe hear a little bit from their story and how they kind of overcome those initial nerves and what was the tipping point. Because I think we all don't feel comfortable on stage, but there's obviously a percentage of people that never go forward. But there's a small percentage of people that do. So I'm going to see whether we can invite on Adam, a good friend of ours, actually, Teddy Dimitrova. I don't know whether you know Teddy, Jamie, but I dare say she's probably in a bar somewhere. Teddy, I've just invited you. Here she is.
Hey, guys.
There she is. Hi, Teddy. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Cheers, guys. Happy Friday.
Happy Cheers. Friday indeed. I'm drinking a cup of tea. Everyone's drinking better stuff. But Teddy, listen, great to see you. And we were, I don't know whether you're watching just previously, but we're just talking about one of the biggest barriers about getting on stage is actually this sense of lack of worthiness, I guess, from people who could be great speakers. I wonder whether that's something you felt before you kind of got on stage. And if so, you know, how did you get over that?
Yeah, so I remember my first encounter with conferences or speaking events was when I first went to SOSU. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, and I got so inspired, and I came back home with like 14 pages of things that I've learned, that I've written down. And I remember sitting in a bar with Jürgen here in Amsterdam, being like super inspired and saying like, oh, I wish one day I can be like those people inspiring other people. And you were like, you can do that tomorrow. And I was like, no. But I just started with recruitment. I don't know anything. I can't share anything. And you said, everybody has a story. You just go out there and share your story. Even if you just started, you have a story how you started. And what you guys said is really true. Like, you lift up your hand and you say, I want to do it. And what I really love about our industry is that the people that are eager and they want to do something, they are getting hurt. So everybody has a story. And if you, well, I would say go on top of the mountain and scream out loud until anybody hears you. That actually happened. I said to probably 10 people that I want to speak one day. And at some point, people started inviting me. And in the beginning, it was scary. It's still scary. I got actually my first keynote just 2 weeks ago at TA Live. And I can tell you that it was like somewhere in the afternoon, and the whole day I was just like shaking and oh my God, what to do? But the thing is that if you love to share what you're passionate about, then everything else is super easy.
Yeah,
can I, can I ask Teddy a question? Whereabouts in the world are you based?
I'm in Amsterdam.
What's the events been like in Amsterdam? Is there a lot of events to attend?
It's been so crazy lately. Like literally at some point there were like literally every week a meetup or a conference or whatever, to the point that you like literally have to start choosing where you want to go because it gets a little bit too much to go to.
It's like London, but Jamie, it's like okay. London.
Right.
I mean, okay. I'm actually there about four times a year because there's so many events.
Right. I think anyone that's lucky enough to be in that situation where they live somewhere or can be somewhere where there's a lot of events. I mean, in London and UK as a whole, we have a ton of events. The barrier to entry to host an event in TA is super low. And that's a great thing as well, because it gives everyone the opportunity to speak. So, you know, you can start with really small 15-person networking events and then slowly build yourself up to some of the, you know, bigger events. That's where you want to go. But there are some people where they have maybe four events a year. You know, I remember in London when we only had CIPD and maybe three other events, and you just saw the same speakers over and over again because they were a safe pair of hands. No one wanted to take a chance. So I think if you're lucky, sorry, go on.
But you know also what the thing is, I think that the role of a community is also to kind of push those people to go out there. You know, I know a couple of people that when I started speaking, they all came to me like, oh my God, and it's so brave that you do it and whatever. I started actually talking to those people the way Hung talked to me 2 years ago. And I was like, come on, you can do it. If you need help with your presentation or with inspiration or whatever, you can do it. And now those people are also speaking at events. Yeah. So our role as a community is not only to sit down and listen to speakers, but also encourage other people to do that. Because at some point, what is happening is that you always have the usual suspects that are always sharing the same content or only their ideas. But there's so many smart young people out there. Sorry, young, smart upcoming people that
good save. Removed the discrimination there.
Exactly. Yeah. But what I want to say is like there's so many people that actually can share so much things. The thing is that it's quite scary to go out there because people are sometimes judgmental and people are insecure. Help others, push them around, help them out, and you would see how our community is going to get better.
You know what? There's some amazing contributions there. I want to pick up on just one kind of thread before we lose it, which was sort of you had to go and approach these conference organizers, Teddy. Like what kind of detail do these conference organizers need? I mean, are you just literally going blank slate and say, I will speak, am I in? Or do you need to like put a pitch together? Do you need to have topics? How does this work?
It really depends, because I have to say that most of the places where I've spoken to, I got invited because other people were like, saying, okay, you should talk to Teddy because she has content. But
I told Baz about you.
Really? Did you? Oh, that's so nice of you.
But he told me I wasn't.
Why?
He told me I wasn't the first person to do that. So.
Oh, wow. That's a very big compliment. Thank you so much. But it's like you pick just one small thing that you're passionate about in your work or you really love to do, and you go and pitch it out there. And you don't have to immediately go to the big conferences. Go to a meetup, speak to the people from the meetup and say, okay, listen, like I'm doing this right now at my job and I really love doing it. And I think that actually some people can get inspired from it. You don't have to have a major thing to talk about. I think the most important thing is that you can share something that can inspire other people.
Yeah. You know what? I've just shared the big list over there, and the big list isn't complete, but there's loads of companies that organize events on the right-hand column of that list. So if people are watching this now and they're thinking, you know what? I need a list of people you can go and email those folks there and adopt the Teddy method and see whether you can get on their radar screen. All right, that's awesome. Teddy, listen, you've been a great guest. I know you've been drinking and you're going to have a good time rest of this evening. So I don't want to sort of have you sitting in front of the screen for the rest of the day. Do you have a holiday on Monday, or have you already had yours? Because you had like King's Day and stuff, didn't you, recently?
Oh, yeah, King's Day. I'm still getting recovered from King's Day, by the way.
Right.
I don't see if
you by the way, if anybody does any business in the Netherlands has not been receiving any emails back or anything like that, because they've been drunk this week. It's basically just been destroyed. All right. So listen, Teddy, it's been a pleasure speaking to you and seeing you. I'll be in actually Amsterdam in about a couple of weeks. So hopefully we can catch up if you're going to be around. Yeah.
Definitely.
All right.
Really nice to see you guys.
See you.
Take it easy, Teddy.
Bye.
Hung, can we just have a quick conversation about like what are the actual benefits of, because we didn't really get into that with Teddy. What are the benefits of talking at events?
Right, we can certainly I mean, let me volunteer my view on this. And then we'll bring on some of the guests who can also support that answer. It's simply exposure. I mean, we're at the point where I personally think that name recognition and brand recognition is one of the most important things that you can accrue. Because it means that you increase the total size of your market. If more people know who you are, the
your
more
market
people,
for what?
It doesn't matter.
That's pretty cynical. That's a bit of that. So yeah, look, don't get me wrong, and I do get that a lot of the reason people talk is that from an in-house point of view, from a resourcing point of view, there is a real desire to share. You know, if you think about what events are, it's a knowledge exchange. One day I'm going to be listening, one day I'm going to be speaking, and that's how the industry develops. Events don't get enough recognition for actually developing the industry, because this is how we swap ideas and learn. So, you know, I know a lot of TA people that they're not doing it for brand recognition. They generally just want to spread the gospel and share with other people. So there is that side as well in terms of what they're getting out of it.
I'll tell you the difference there is probably because I haven't worked as an internal person for a long time. And in fact, I don't think I ever did any talks when I was working internally. So I've kind of always got like, I've got a business growth type of mentality on it. Yeah. And for me, I mean, obviously public speaking, it is about sharing what you know, but I'm also one of, you could do that very well online in a non kind of in-person way. And for me, I still get quite nervous doing it. So I don't feel comfortable, up there. Do I enjoy it? I can't really say I do, really. But there is so much value add in doing so that it makes that makes all the sense in the world to keep doing it. So, but listen, I think other people can answer that question more than I, Adam. So I'm going to bring on our next guest, who is Dov Zavado. I don't know whether you guys know Dov, a recruiter. He's done a lot of stuff, actually. He's worked in-house, worked agency, worked kind of an RPO, now with Expedia. And he's just about getting started into his first talk, I think, in the next couple of weeks. So I'll be interested to see what Dov's journey is and what he's been thinking, really.
Just while Dov's joining, can I just give you my... I wrote down a list of seven reasons why I think it's useful to events. Hi, Dov.
Hi, Dov. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we're gonna hear you.
Yeah,
fine.
Yeah, all good.
Just really quick fire. If you're freelance or something like that, again, getting gigs. If you're in a job, then it's getting approached for other jobs. Mm-hmm. If you're in a job as a recruiter, it's getting people applying to you as a candidate. If you are selling something, then it's selling more of it. If you're selling something, then it might be generating partners. If you are either doing any of those things, or you're just on an ego trip, then it's generating followers. And for some people, it's generating like love and respect and self-worth, because people bow down to you when you're going on that stage. So sometimes it's about fulfilling self-esteem.
Can I add one thing as well? I think it's credibility as well. After some time, when you share a lot of content, like we have a lot of people in the community who are inspiring others, like Teddy said as well, like, you know, when one person is inspiring and pushing someone else to kind of get into that. Like, it's not that, you know, everyone is afraid that, hey, there will be too many speakers. Like, I will not be be able to speak anymore. It's more about the other way around. It's inspiring more people to speak and maybe bring the new ideas, because I completely agree, like, it's really hard to come up with something new, and because it seems like everyone already spoke about everything, right? Like, there were so many conferences, so many speakers, and yeah.
I tell you what, Dov, maybe that's actually one of the things we should narrow down on. Like, one of the frictions that stop new people speaking is the sense that I've got nothing new to add to this conversation. And I think that's broadly true. But at the same time, everyone's got a perspective or an angle. As Jamie mentioned, you may have old content, but you're looking at it from a different perspective that hasn't been heard before, or you're delivering it in a manner that hasn't been seen before. So I understand from your side, you are just starting your journey on the public speaking side, aren't you? Tell us a little bit about that.
So, you know, I've been looking at TED Talks for, I don't know, 10, 15 years now. And like, I always had the idea of one day, actually, this is my dream, to deliver a TED Talk. I even have the whole image of that. And then along the way, you know, one thing led to another, and I was invited to speak at SOSU in Tallinn this year, which is really close to Lithuania, where my home is. So that's the irony, but it's not Amsterdam, but it's Tallinn. It's the first time in Estonia, and it's the first time in Baltics where SOSU is going to happen. And that's where I'm going to be speaking, right? So, you know, I think that for me, how it all happened, that I was really lucky enough to have a mentor. And I believe that this is, you know, this is part of what is extremely important, is to have someone who believes in you, who gives you that extra push that you need, and to, especially to notice when you need that push, right? So, because it's really easy to ignore and just like move on. But so in my situation, that was Mark Lindgren, and Hank, you will remember when we actually met for the first time, that was after really small networking, like a meetup that Catherine Sourcing had made in London. I think that's like 2.5 years ago. And there were like, there was you and Mark who stayed after the actual meetup, and we ended up in a pub, and our friendship began. And you know, and our friendship began, but and I think that it's incredibly important to belong to those groups, to stay after the event, just to connect with people and volunteer, right? So I had unique opportunity last year to volunteer at SOSU and help speakers and see how they're struggling before they actually get on stage, and this is eye-opening as well.
All right, listen, I'm going to write that down straight away. You stay after the event officially closes, right?
Yeah, so because this is how you connect. Okay, so you've been to, you've been to a lot of events in general, right? So it doesn't matter whether that's a small one or a big one. I remember Lassie and SOSU, what I've noticed, that there are, it's the best thing to go into events like that by yourself, when you don't represent, when you don't have a team with you. So it happened to me in 2016 when I just joined Aspen in-house, and Andy Mountney, he was like, you're going to SOSU basically on my first week. On my first day, I was flying to Amsterdam alone. And I had no idea what I'm doing, why I'm here, you know. And I've had the chance to talk to a lot of people. Now, last year, for example, I've noticed that companies are, it's good that they have budgets to send groups of people to conferences. But then when you're like, hey, so you're going to, you know, drinks. And they're like, no, we're going to explore Amsterdam. And I'm like, you're missing out on a lot of opportunities and just a lot of connections that you could potentially create. I mean, it's not selfishly, oh, I'm going to do something out of it. It's just connecting with people. And that happens after the whole event.
Dov, that's a brilliant point that you make. I mean, there's two points there. Firstly, hang around afterwards. The bell doesn't shut and then you leave. Of course, all of that loose conversation, lubricated maybe by a beer or dinner or whatever it is, that's where you truly get to know people. And I do kind of recall sort of having a chat with you on at the end of that Catherine Robinson event, actually. So great that we both remembered that. But the second point you mentioned was go by yourself. That's not something I realized. But of course, it's like going on holiday with a big crew of your mates. You're not going to interact with any of the local people, are you? You're just going to hang around with your crew and a clique. But if you're brave enough to say, hey, listen, I'm just going to go to this conference. I don't know anybody, but I know you do. There would be very good contacts for you to progress with.
Really, because you're in a safe zone, right? I remember, like, recently Catherine and I, because we were both with Expedia, so we went to DVR event in London, and I was in the mood to network, she wasn't in the mood to network, and we were like, we ended up talking together, which is the worst thing that you can possibly do at a meetup event, because you're not really connecting with anyone else. So, you know, if I was a manager and I would have, I don't know, five sources of recruiters going to Amsterdam or like to any conference, bigger event, I would say, like, look, you go, you divide, and you connect with people, and then I want to see the list of people that you actually had a chat with. It's not about the number of people, it's about having, you know, sometimes just having several really meaningful conversations is better than, oh, I increased my LinkedIn by 30 people from that particular event. Because it's not about who you know, I believe it's about who knows you, because as what Teddy as well said, you are recommended or referred to someone by someone else. It's not that I really want to speak. Like, when, you know, that happened to me as well, I ended up in, like last year, I was going through a really weird space in my time, and Mark just pushed me and said, like, hey, Phil is looking for volunteers for SOSA, you should go. And I went there and, you know, I ended up managing all the speakers, like, and helping everything that possibly you can do at the event to make sure that it happens. You know, but then it's just community, you know, and it's an incredible community. For me, the biggest surprise was on the first evening, even before the event, I arrived and we were doing the passes and, you know, putting everything and preparing. And then Irina walks in straight from the, basically from the airport. She's like, hey guys, how can I help? And she was doing exactly the same. And, you know, and I was like, well, in my eyes, she's the rock star of sourcing, you know, like the highest caliber, right? And she was doing exactly the same thing. And this is, you know, being humble and being just there to help the community. I think what is really important.
I'm taking notes here, Dov, because this is really good stuff. Basically, another impact of going into and volunteering is that you get into the green room, right? You can see all of the speakers, you can beforehand, you know, even if you're doing the kind of the gophering job, you've got a great way to network with people that are prominent in the industry. And they're people that actually would pay money to spend time with. You know, Irina would charge you consultancy on this, but here you can see her and work together on putting the lanyards together or something, you know? That's gonna be really rich relationship building. So great tip there, Dov. Jamie, I want to bring you in here on this, because I know that Dov's mentioned a very interesting thing about, hey, listen, it's great to see teams go from a single company to events. I know RecFest is, you promote that and you have that, and it's fantastic to see.
Yeah.
But how do you think what Dov mentioned there has got any value in the sense of maybe you should break the team up a little bit when they arrive?
100%. So over the last few years, RecFest has almost gone into two different directions. There's the kind of the education part, but there's also the kind of team bonding part. So IBM is sending down 20 people, Tesco's are sending down 30 people, and it becomes that kind of big celebration day out. And what we started to do for RecFest, we started last year, is to actually buddy up people that are maybe not confident to go on their own. And we do get that sometimes. You get a lot of people that say, I'm a one-man recruitment team, or I'm the only person that's going, and I'm not confident to walk into it, because it can be quite overwhelming. I mean, look, let's be honest. We here, we kind of like, you know, the Facebook community or that kind of 5% of the market. If you're coming from outside of that, this is really daunting. So we've offered to start buddying people up. And last year that worked really well for us. So recruiters coming in and, you know, they would say to us, I'm not that confident to go on my own. And we'd buddy them up with someone. All of a sudden, you know, they've got someone that they've never met before that maybe they have a shared interest with. Maybe it's the same industry, or maybe they're a similar position within the company. And, you know, and all of a sudden they're getting that additional benefit to being there, because they've got a new friend, they've got a new connection. But actually, as a pair, they feel way more confident to go and start talking to people. But I absolutely agree. I mean, if I was sending a team of people to any event, I'd want them to spread out and go and talk to as many people as possible. When you look at the reason that a lot of people send their teams to RecFest, it's to meet new recruiters and peers and expand their horizon slightly, because we are very insular, and resourcing teams can be super, super insular. So yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think it's a great idea to get people to go and meet other recruiters and expand their horizons. And I never realized how important it was for in-house people to network together as well. I get why it's important for providers to network with in-house people, but actually getting in-house people to network together is a really big deal. So no, I think it's very, very important.
Yeah. Maybe can I just quickly add, I remember once when I went to TEDx 5 years ago, that was the first thing at all networking events that they said. If you came into the room, into the event with someone you know, you say goodbye to them and you will meet them after 3 hours. Make sure that you connect with as many people as you can. In, you know, but at the end of the day, it's not about the number, right? But as well, there was an app that generated 10 people that you should meet by the end of the conference. Yeah. So this is a really cool concept, depending on your interests and on your mutual connections, or just basically target. I mean, now with all the AI apps and everything, I think it could be even taken further, but then you know who to search for, right? And to connect with them.
All right, before anybody says another word, can people who are watching this, if you know of a decent events app that can help you do networking, please ping that into the chat bar. Jimmy, you're going to say something there?
No, just on that. So we did that for the last 2 years at RecFest. It worked really well. What we're doing this year is we've invested quite a bit more into it. So what we now have is the lanyards have almost like connection technology. So if two people can meet, they touch their lanyards and it swaps over their contact details. So it kind of supercharges that networking element. And actually then their bosses can see, are they just meeting the same old people or are they actually meeting people outside their own network as well? So yeah, I think—
You know what, Jimmy, I saw that video and it was brilliant. I wonder whether you could dig that out during the course of this call and just share it in chat there. Cause I thought the lanyard innovation was really, really good. Okay, Dov, listen, you've been great on the show. Thank you so much for coming on and giving us your input. Really,
it's a pleasure.
We could spend like 60 minutes and get more value from you. Tell us a little bit more about when you're on SOSU. It's in a couple of weeks, isn't it? Next month or so?
So first I will be joining Mark Lundgren's panel in SourceCon in Amsterdam. And then I'm going to Tallinn to SOSU. It's going to be the beginning of June.
Yep, fantastic. And what are you going to be talking about, Dov?
How to get a job as a sourcer.
Amazing. Great stuff. All right. Everyone follow Dov as Zavado. Dov, put your LinkedIn into the chat box and start connecting with people there.
Cheers.
Great. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Cheers, Dov. Cheers. Bye.
Cool. Really interesting to get these speakers on. Mm. Everyone seems to have a different kind of perspective and throwing like gold dust ideas here. I've got a list of, I'm already up to 13 points here. Which I'll share with everyone, by the way, at some point later on today. All those two things, RecFest, SourceCon, SOSU. I have brain food discounts for all of that stuff. So if people want to get involved in that, sign up for the newsletter, get into the Facebook group, because that's where typically I distribute the discounts. If you want to pay a full rate, go ahead. But if you want a slightly cheaper fare, I can help you with that. All right, so listen, I need to bring on another guest. But before we do that, just quick stop and refresh. Anything you two gents want to say and add to what we've talked about?
Yeah, there's been a lot of interesting discussion in the side panel here, actually. And so, Jamie, for you, I want to find out. So Adam Posner has asked, do you people in the UK and EU... It is the one place. Do you people in the EU? He did say UK / EU, but we're still the same place. Do you people in the EU care about what people think from the other side of the pond? And I responded with, not especially. However, Jamie will have a different view on that.
I saw that comment and thought you might reply to that one. So this year, out of 75 speakers at RecFest, we have 12 we're flying over from the US. So I'll give a little in terms of why we're doing that. And the biggest thing is overexposure. We have a slight issue in the UK with speakers being overly exposed and trying to find unique content and speakers that people have never heard before is still difficult. You can find people to talk, but finding people that can talk well with a good story is a different matter. So the reason that we do invest quite a bit of money into bringing over people like Torin Ellis, James Ellis, and John Vlasilika and those guys, is that they haven't spoken in the UK ever. And now I know people like Matt Charney and James Ellis have, but they're not overly exposed to this marketplace. You know, no one's really seen them at a live event, and that's why we invest money into bringing them over. Now, on to Adam's point about, you know, Adam's mentioned before, do we only put Americans on stage? We've got 75 speakers, you know, and there's only 15 of them that are American. But no, for us, it's just about, like, we track every major TA event in the world. So our marketing team do a really good job of knowing every major TA and resource and event. And then I'll get a report after every event saying, these are the speakers that really blow up on social media. These are the ones that got the most likes, got the most shares, got the most comments, pictures. And from that, we can start to have conversations with people. So Torin Ellis was, Dave Ralph put Torin Ellis on radar with us about a year ago. And he just started to really blow up that US talk scene. And, you know, he was getting incredible feedback. So, yeah, we reached out and said, look, have you been over here before? Never spoke over it. Great. Look, let's get you over. We need to put you on exclusive until Wreckfest. And, you know, that's, for us, it's a way of avoiding fatigue within that speaker circuit.
Something that's interesting, though, is US events, I don't think, really pay people from the EU to go and talk at on stage at their events.
It says more about the US as a country than it does our speakers. I can absolutely promise you that.
Right, hang on. I want to talk about that because there's two things I want to talk about. Number one, overexposure. Jamie, at what point do you see this person's all over the place? It's too much. I appreciate. I probably am guilty of this, but I don't know. I am a default yes person, right? Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And then I realize I'm totally overstretched, and I realize at some point, Hung, you are literally too ubiquitous. But from an event organizer, at what point do you think, wow, this guy is just all over the place?
So it's difficult to put it into numbers, but I think there's two issues. There's the fact we have so many events in the UK, and again, the barriers, because generally we don't pay speakers for the most part. We pay them with social media love and exposure and all the stuff we spoke about. So it's very easy to bring in the same person time off time again to multiple events. I think the other thing is the explosion of video within events. You know, everyone now with smartphones the way they are can do it, record a decent speaker video. You know, you don't need all the equipment. And then once you've got that, then you've got LinkedIn that love video at the moment. So you're not only getting overexposed for being at the events, it's what happens afterwards with the content and how it's pushed out that becomes, oh man, I've seen this before. Like, you know, the same story is coming up over and over again.
All right, Jamie, then give me some quick numbers. Is it acceptable for a speaker to do the same talk more than once a year?
It is. Yeah, I think that'd be fine. For me, it's when they did it. So what? How long have we got since they last gave that talk? And also, how big was the audience? You know, if it was a 20-person audience and I'm going to put me in front of 500 people at Wreckfest, there's a solid chance that's new content to that audience. If they've done it at ERE or a UK one, say Unleash, then yeah, probably most people are going to see that by the time they get to my event. So it's, you have to kind of weigh it up. And also what the audience was as well. You guys went to the recruitment network, which is awesome. I love those guys. But that's a purely that's a pure retcon marketplace. So chances are it hasn't overlapped with any of our audience at all.
Yeah. So from an event organizer's point of view, the main thing about you is I want to put on fresh content to the audience so they're not sitting there thinking, wow, I've heard this story before.
I always want unique, right? So I always ask for something different. Whether I get it or not is a different thing. And your bargaining chip is always the size and the relevancy of your audience. With Wreckfest, we can demand, you're not going to talk about that anywhere else until you get to Wreckfest because it's a big, you know, massive event. With some of our smaller ones, not so much.
Yeah, you know, so you embargo people, basically, yeah? Mm-hmm.
I know a couple of people, the people I'm talking about, you both know them as well. I know a couple of people who are some of the premier speakers on talent acquisition subjects around the world. And if they get invited to talk at an event, they go, okay, do you want this one or this one? And that's it.
Don't like that.
Someone you know really well and have on stage regularly does that.
Yeah, I think we both know who that is. Yeah, yeah. I think, interestingly, we spoke about how do you get on stage. How do you stay on stage is another conversation.
So great line, yep.
There's a couple of things there. Like, you can get a one event, but getting a multiple events and, you know, becoming part of that scene is very different. Unique content each time is very difficult, but absolutely will keep you on stage. The one thing, and this is just from an event organizer experience point of view, don't be an arsehole to the event organizer. Like, if you want to keep coming back, don't be an arsehole, because we have had to deal with some major divas in the past, both, you know, men and women. And you do that once, you don't get invited back, because there is so many speakers out there.
But when I did that petition, though, I got over 200 names saying I should have been on the main stage.
You did. And we love you for it. Thank you. You've been one of the greatest promoters of Wreckfest so far. So thank you for that. And we do love you.
Right, Jamie, before I bring on more guests here, tell me how I become an arsehole here. Maybe I've already done that. I don't know. Yeah. Like, what are the things you can't abide by as an event organizer that this is just problematic for you?
Okay, first of all, what we call no-shows. So if you don't turn up,
no-show.
So in terms of we've booked you to speak and you don't turn up on the day without letting us know.
That happens. That's terrible. Okay.
I promise you that does happen.
So
insulting the audience. We've had that as well, you know, being very patronizing to a very senior RO100 audience has happened. We've had to take people off stage in the past because the audience were getting so upset. That has generally has happened.
Do you mean patronizing them?
So look, we all, pardon my French, but we all fuck up, all right? Picking speakers is difficult, especially if you've never seen them before. So if you're trying to find people that are brand new and don't do the circuit, it's difficult because you don't know what they're like. You can vet them over the phone, you can screen them. Sometimes you get them up on stage and they start to die, and you know, they start to ask the audience questions, and we've had a few people that have snapped back very quickly and been quite insulting to the audience. And no, that's not right. I know what's going on. That's why I'm the speaker and you're not. We've had once in the entire time of doing this, I've had to say, look, I think you're going to have to come off because this is getting quite heated.
Oh my good Lord. I know. I'm kind of, the gossip in me now needs to think, right, I need to find out who that is.
It must be Jacob, surely.
No. We love Jacob. Jacob's awesome.
I love Jake.
I know. I'm only kidding.
But also just being rude to the staff, you know, some people they won't be rude directly to me, but they'll be rude to our marketing people or our events managers or project managers. And like, don't do that. That's going to mean you don't come back ever again.
Okay. So we've got some good stuff there. Basically no shows, don't patronize the audience, and don't cause problems for the team putting it together.
The other thing I will say, and this is just a trope of the event industry, and something we need to stop doing. Event organizers ask for their decks to be like 2 weeks in advance.
Yeah.
But we stopped doing this years ago. That's never going to happen. We just work on a daily basis now. Like, we used to say, okay, you know, we need your deck 2 weeks so we can vet it. That's never going to happen. You're not paying people money, so why are they ever going to do that? You know, now it's just like, okay, you know, turn up. We'll have a quick look through before you start and see where you go from there.
But yeah, that's a really good point.
Quite honestly, you want their absolute up to date to the day most you know thinking that is the most cutting edge, and it's not going to be 2 weeks ago. I've changed my view on things in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
All right. Absolutely. Listen, guys, we could keep talking forever, but what I'm going to do now is bring on a good friend of mine, Sophia Broberger, who is really doing well on stage these days. And I want to hear her story and get her opinion on some of this stuff as well.
I would say Sophia is this is not going to come across very well, but Sophia is the old Teddy. And the reason the reason for that is because Teddy took over Sophia's slot at TA Live this year, and I was at both of them, and I really enjoyed both of them.
Well, Sophia, how are you doing? Great to see you. Thanks for joining us. I know it's like 6 o'clock in Stockholm right now, and Brad, you've been watching the show, so hopefully you've enjoyed some of the dialogue and the stuff we've shared. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of your journey from getting on stage? I mean, what kind of prompted you to make the decision, I want to do this now?
Well, I don't know what prompted the decision. As I mentioned in a chat earlier to you, I wanted to be an actress when I was younger, and you know, I always enjoyed being on stage and people looking at me. So always been like that. So it's not for me. I enjoy being on stage. I don't necessarily feel nervous about it. So in that sense, it wasn't that big a thing. But the first thing I did was for a small thing here in Stockholm, with only like 35 people in the audience. And there was somebody else who used to talk. It was a like an HR type event, and with 1 hour in the full day about sourcing. And they used to have another girl doing it, and then she couldn't do it anymore. So they asked me, like, could you do the sourcing part of this full day event? And I was like, yeah, fine, I'll do that. And that was the first thing I did. And as you were mentioning earlier with the Facebook groups and things, and the first kind of international gig I got was actually in Amsterdam for Bass's TA Live that Adam mentioned. And that was simply through just being active in Growth Hacking Recruiters in the Facebook group. And he asked there, look, he was asking, I think his words were, he was looking for kick-ass female speakers, and I didn't put my hand up. But then he messaged me going, well, you know, do you want to do it? I said, well, you said you're looking for kick-ass. And it's like, well, that'll be you. I'm not sure about that, but I'll give it a go.
I can guarantee that Sophia wasn't nervous, because we had breakfast the morning of that event, and she was just like, it's an everyday, no problem.
No, yeah, I don't do nervous.
Maybe one of the naturals on stage. That's a really good story, Sophia, particularly about the idea of being ready to replace, right? I mean, Jamie, just before Sophia came on, you talk about people not showing up and letting you down and stuff. So if you get connected with the event organizers, there's half a chance you might get a call simply because, you know what, something's happened and I need you to step in. And your ability, I guess, to quickly make a yes decision on that and not be, you know, overly worried about what's going to occur. So be visible, be connected to the event organizers, and kind of indicate, listen, if you need like someone to step in as a ready there figure, I'm your boy or girl, then I'm sure that's a very useful position to be in. In fact, that's my default position to a lot of events now, because I'm a bit tired, I'm getting old, getting gray, and I'm thinking, right, you know, probably my best role now is like to be the, you know, 35-year-old sub that you stick on. If you want to kick out on score, yeah. Draw, you know, that's the guy I see myself in. Anyway, that's fantastic. Sophia, you did talk about, you raised the gender thing, right? So I'm going to dive into that, because that is obviously something is very important. Well, you talked about Bass sort of mentioning, yeah, he was looking specifically for a female speaker. And I think this is a persistent issue. And it seems to be a struggle. I think alongside with pay or not pay, the diversity issue on stage is probably the two controversial topics that I'm seeing. Now, from your side as a speaker and as a woman, what do event organizers need to do in order to make it more obvious that you might be suitable for that particular event? If anything, you know?
I don't think they do anything in particular, to be fair. I mean, Well, Bass was pretty obvious. He asked for female speakers specifically. That's what he said. That's what he was after.
Is there anything that event organizers are doing that you think might put women off? I mean, what is do you have any opinion on that? What would make it, I guess, easier to diversify, I guess, is what I'm trying to, I'm struggling to say.
I honestly don't know. I think approach them directly asking, would you like to speak, rather than going, is there anyone who would like to?
That fits in with the whole way about the whole thing about women. If you approach a woman about a job, she's more likely to say yes than if you advertise it.
Yes,
you know, it's exactly the same thing.
Is there research on that? Have you just said that, Adam?
What about the job description thing? There is, yeah, there's. Women are less likely to apply for jobs they're not sure they've got the skills for than a man is. But the response by direct sourcing is 50-50, men and women, same kind of proportion. There's no noticeable difference.
Right. So that's really important then, because basically a public shout out, which, you know, sometimes is the lazy way to do it. Hey, listen, I need this. You're going to get a bunch of men sticking their hands up, right? Straight away. Yeah, of course, I'm diving in there. And that straight away imbalances the panel that you have. But maybe what you need to do first is to do some direct messaging. Identify your slate, men and women, direct message.
So actually, very different approach there between Sophia and Teddy, actually, because Teddy just went, fuck it, I'm joining you, and messaged them all, right, you have me on stage, yes? So different approach.
No, but I think it's interesting to there's never going to be one solution to all of these problems. These are complex human interactions, and who knows what is the perfect thing. I think we just got to keep digging and keep trying and seeing where we're at. Go on, Jimmy. I think you can say something.
No, I'll scratch my hand.
All right, that's fine. I've kind of got a rough patch on my hand as well. I scratched that as well. That happens.
I didn't do it.
So, Sophia, what's the people talk about nerves before? Teddy mentioned, hey, listen, she felt really nervous going on stage. I still feel that way. I want to know from your side, because you're saying this is not a problem for you. Is there any mental sort of things that I could learn to kind of make myself less stressed before I get on stage?
I'm the wrong person to ask, because obviously I don't have that issue. I know that if I kind of practice speaking, it was the same when I was doing acting when I was younger. If I practice kind of without an audience, I'm all right. But when I have the audience, it makes me better. I need the audience and I need their reaction. I need the attention to actually do a good job.
You're like the Rolling Stones of recruitment speakers. apparently, they're miles better when they're on stage than when they're in the studio.
Yeah.
You know what? There's probably science behind that, because it is an interactive exercise when you're talking live to an audience.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, because you're reading things like body language, little micro expressions and all that type of stuff. Maria's talking. Maria, I picture them naked all the time. Don't worry about that. It's nothing to do with public speaking. I think with the Bass has probably got an opinion on this, because he's very much into studying, like, you know, how people react to these micro kind of expressions. So I wonder whether that's something that people might be able to learn. Okay, cool. Well, a couple of questions for you, Sophia. I don't want to keep you here forever, because I know you got kids to take care of and all that type of stuff. Young speaker. No, they're probably looking for mommy at some point, but. A young speaker right now who's thinking about it and they want to get on stage and they're not sure how, what advice would you give them before, what's the one thing that they should be doing in order to make this happen?
Be visible. I think what everyone else is saying, like just what Adam was saying, engage in the Facebook group. Even if you're not posting things yourself, join the discussions, be there, you know, be visible and have an opinion. and you know, give examples how you've done it. Like you said, nobody's really coming up with necessarily new things, but you're doing your version of it. And somebody might say, "Oh, I do it this way. Oh, I do it almost that way. I do it this way." And just be visible and be loud, kind of thing. But in terms of the internet, write blogs, engage. And I know somebody approached me because I do training sessions. Somebody approached me because what they'd seen was me in a discussion under one of your posts on LinkedIn. They'd seen me in the discussions and therefore they went to my webpage and approached me in my training. But simply seeing the comments in your post.
Yeah, so basically visibility is one of the ways. Yeah. Don't just sit there and expect that someone's going to pick you up, because event organizing is massively intense in terms of workloads, particularly before the event. Discoverability of speakers is going to be a massive issue. You can't just like pluck them out of the sky, can you? Go on, Jimmy.
Just on that one. So if anyone's going to kind of start off their speaking career or journey, and they're going to start with a smaller event, which I do think is a good idea, ask the organizer what they're going to do with the content. So are they going to film? Are they going to push it on social media? You know, what are they going to do with that content afterwards? Because that's actually a really big deal. And if someone's not recording, then they probably should be, because it doesn't take a lot. And, you know, you can use that. You can then send that video to other event organizers. And we get it weekly. People saying, check out, you know, this is my speech from so-and-so. It's my speech from so-and-so on YouTube. You know, let me know what you think about it. You know, ask, don't just do it for the sake of doing it. Ask them what they're going to do for you. How are they going to promote you in the build-up? How are they going to promote you at the event? And on that note, LinkedIn Live is going to be absolutely massive for speakers. When that drops, it's going to be probably one of the biggest tech shifts in events, because, you know, we get to promote and we get to send out that speaker's video live to a business audience, which we currently don't do. I just ask a question, you know, what are you doing with this content? What am I going to get in the build up? What social media, you know, love am I going to get? Would be my advice.
Yeah. On that note, I just want to just give a shout out to Bill Bowman. I've just shared his Facebook profile there. He's actually amazing at videoing his own talks, irrespective of whether the video there at all. And he just live streams it because I think he's very aware that, you know what, let's get more people looking at what he's doing. And he's always got either me or someone else, a friend of his in the audience, is literally live streaming it out. So record your talks and do those things. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Listen, I'm running out of energy. I'm running out of time. So Sophia, I'm going to have to say goodbye to you at this point. Great seeing you. And hopefully I'll see you soon. I don't know whether you're going to be at any of the events I'm going at, but I think next month is starting the circuit for me. So hopefully I will see you at one of those. And thank you so much for stepping in and having a chat with us this afternoon.
Thanks, Sophia.
Thank you, Theo.
Hung, you have to say goodbye to me, I'm afraid, as well. I have to go or else I'm in big trouble.
No, I think we all do. I'm running out of juice. So listen, thank you, everyone, for being here. Apologies to Steve, to Carmen, and Bass, and the other people I'm not able to bring on, but we are about 10 minutes over. Hope you've got some value out of today's session. I'm going to find a way to make sure this is more discoverable for other people. So I'll share this video. I'm also experimenting with an audio-only version, which probably will be podcasted at some point, so you can consume it at leisure. But thank you all for your efforts. We'll be back next week, so make sure you follow the channel. Let me just share the channel for you to follow.
Thanks for being on, guys, as well. I've already enjoyed this. Thank you.
No, Jamie, listen, I want to get you back on because I think there's so much that we can talk about. And so much we haven't dived into event economics, for instance. We haven't even touched the diversity thing properly.
I think we should come back to this. I really do. I think we should.
Yeah, I like it.
I don't even think we've covered half of what we could have done.
No, but listen. Yeah, thank you very much, everyone. We'll be back next week. Have a very good weekend. Thank you for joining Brain Food Live on Air.
Cheers.
Bye,
everyone.
Bye.